Hi. Carl and I, as Klaus said, are going to talk about the Tug Interviews project and the book. Well, it keeps going away after every time. The what?
Left, right, arrow.
Left, right, arrow. Okay, I'll try that next time. Here's the outline of what we're going to speak about. And we'll start with the first point in the outline. Basically, the idea behind this was inspired by the Mathematical People books. I don't know how many of you know these books. I believe they were originally interviews from the Journal of College Mathematics. They're wonderful books, and I recommend them to you if you haven't read them, if you're interested in math or mathematicians. Probably many of the mathematicians in these books are the mathematicians whose books we studied when we were math students. So I recommend them to you. My thought was that since I was new to the tech world and didn't know all of you people, that it would be interesting to have a set of interviews so I could learn something about you. So it's a little bit selfish. Also had the idea that perhaps old timers might be interested in what some of the other people had done because they didn't necessarily know the backgrounds. They might be focused on some package that they interacted on, but not had much to do with the rest of each other's lives. So I also have the belief that technology is done by people, and therefore you can get some sense of what the technology is about from learning a little bit more about the people. When I suggested this to Carl, I think it's safe to say he was quite encouraging. So let's talk about the interview method. The first couple of interviewers were chosen carefully because I was afraid when I, somebody who nobody had ever heard of, came and asked to interview somebody, everybody would say, "Who are you? Never mind." So I chose a couple of first people pretty carefully. I approached them. They did the interviews. And over time, the idea of being interviewed by somebody who hadn't been a part of the tech community for so long became less important, and plus I became part of the tech community for a longer period of time. We choose the interviewers based on diversity. We want people who are users, developers, involved in the administration of the local organizations, and so on. We want people from different countries, but in particular, I want people who are willing to respond relatively quickly. So we do take a look at, if this is a person who writes a lot, we're more likely to go to them to be interviewed because maybe it's not so hard for them to send an email back. We do plain text questions and answers by email. The first couple of interviews, I sent 12 questions or 15 questions thinking it would be easy. But that turns out to be a big burden. People, when they see that many questions, they can hardly deal with it. So I changed the thought to, we'll send 2 questions. And what they respond based on those 2 questions will result in 3 or 4 more questions, and that'll result in 3 or 4 more questions, and maybe we'll about have enough. At that point, we convert the emails into HTML. I did that manually for a long time. Carl proofreads them. Maybe we do a little bit of editing, trying to keep the interviewee's voice still. I think it's safe to say we use the same style in some sense that Tugboat does, which is we kind of have an international English style. If you do it this way in England, or you do it this way in Germany, or you do it that way in the United States, that's the way we leave it. At that point, I may sort the questions around a little bit to improve the flow. May change the questions to better suit the answers to make things look more spontaneous. I may have a long question that gets out a particular answer, and then I'll change it to a little question so it seems like the person answered quite spontaneously. We send it back to the author. The author reviews it. What the interviewee says is what goes. We don't print anything they don't want. A little while later, we got the idea, maybe we ought to have photos. So we began asking for photos. We went back to the early interviewees and got photos from them, mostly, and made a mistake. But I'll come back to that. Now, that's the next thing that happens, we began to think about a book. So we added to our things that we talked to interviewees about, of if you agree to do the interview, not only will you have the final say about the interview, but you're also agreeing to participate in the book. And you won't have to do any more work than perhaps reread the typeset interview.
If you want to.
If you want to. And then after just a minute, we thought, well, if we're going to have the book in LaTeX, and the interviewers are going to be in interviews are going to be in HDL, how do we not have to do everything twice? So we wrote some M4 macros. Presumably most people here know about M4. For those of you who don't, it's the nth iteration of a macro processor originally written in the United Kingdom by Christopher Strachey, published in the Computer Journal, I believe, in the 1960s. So we defined, the format of an M4 macro is define, paren, argument separated by comma, close paren. So here we're defining the macro underscore par, a paragraph, to be an HTML paragraph. Here we're defining IT, thank you. I may be able to point this less straight than my hand.
Just an option.
Okay, we turn that into an italicized and unitalicized in HTML. These square brackets are because we really don't always know what's in our arguments. We don't want to see a comma in there that'll make another argument, so we put quotes around it. Probably we've got one square bracket somewhere in it, so we better have two because it's unlikely somebody used that. So that's the kind of clunky, ugly convention we used. You can imagine how with different M4 definitions, par could turn into par or blank line. And IT could turn into text IT of some text. So that was our idea. Now, some may say, why didn't you use XML that could target this or that? Or I was just reading, Tim, you're going to present something tomorrow that might have helped us. The simple answer is Carl and I were lazy. We had a relatively straightforward problem, not too many different kinds of markup. We both knew M4. I could make it go to HTML. Carl could make it go to LaTeX. So that's what we did. Here are some of the commands we used. The interviewer's name, interviewer's initials, the interviewee's name and initials, a header that has the photo, calls the photo and stuff. The first question where you say the full name and interviewer. The second question where you just put the initials, footers, links, a few little markup things. Here's a few more kinds of dashes, ampersand, some environments, begin a verbatim, end a verbatim, ordered and unordered lists, plus a whole bunch of definitions with people's names with diacritical marks in them or other words with diacritical marks in them. Here's Arthur's. Where's Arthur? He's not here today. Well, here's Arthur's interview, a little bit. We define the date, the interviewee's name, the interviewee's initials, the header, the first question. He gives his first answer. There's a paragraph. He gives the next paragraph of his answer. He gives the second question. Remember, that just has the initials, gives the answers, and so on. So that's how it is. And Carl, in a minute, will show what came out of this. Okay, then we decided to do the book. The first question was, how big should the book be? We chose 7x10, basically because it was big enough so we didn't have to use too many pages, and small enough so we didn't have to do double columns. Carl then created some M4 macros targeting LaTeX. And he did stuff with, all kind of Unix tools or Linux tools to take the previous interviews, which had not been done in M4 but were just done in HTML, and converted them to M4 first. The idea being, when we later want to convert the edited interviews for the book back to the website for HTML, it would be nice to have them all in M4. We circulated the page proofs to the interviewees. I skipped a step. Barbara volunteered to edit all of these and did. Just we circulated page proofs back to the interviewees. Many interviewees said at that point, well, if Barbara edited it, I don't have to look at it. Because Barbara's editing abilities are quite renowned in our community. And I'd like to stop for just a second and appreciate all the work she did. We invited her to be a co-editor on the front cover. She declined. But at this point, we'd at least like to give her an autographed copy of the book. So, Barbara, thank you very much. Okay. Now, this is my mistake. When we decided we should have photographs, I said, give me photographs that would fit the HTML page. I forgot we were going to need higher resolution photographs for printing. This caused a bunch of problems. I had to go back to many people and get higher resolution photographs. Some people didn't have higher resolution photographs, and we'll come back to that in a minute. And then finally, there's the question of, do we do the interviews in the book chronologically or alphabetically? We ultimately decided on chronologically and then made a second table of contents that was alphabetical. I think it's your turn, Carl, is that right?
Yeah.
You push this button to get the next thing.
Okay.
Here's your winner. I'm turning it over to Carl for all technical detail.
Well, Dave said that. Actually, I wanted to mention that, and even though my slide is titled, you know, Technical LaTeX Details, Dave is a technical guy. he did kind of the initial M4 in HTML. So another thing Dave mentioned in passing was targeting LaTeX, and we hadn't decided at the point that we knew we wanted to do a book. We had no idea about whether we wanted to do it in LaTeX or plain text or context or whatever, and I'll talk about that briefly in just a minute. But technical LaTeX details. So about the book, I organize all my projects with a make file so that I can just type make, everything happens, the final book comes out if there are no errors. There's a top level tech file for the book. It just includes all the interviewees, nothing very special about that. The only slightly unusual thing is that I then use some features in GNU Make to extract the list of interviewees from that top level file to be the dependencies in the make file so that I don't have to write the list of 50 names twice and maintain it twice and inevitably make mistakes. There's also a style file for the book, it is a style file. And that basically just loads a bunch of other packages, most of which Boris just mentioned. Geometry to deal with the page size and all that. As Dave said, our criteria was single column and maximum size given that criteria, because fewer pages would be fewer cost in the end. GraphicX to handle images, fancy header, as Boris mentioned, to deal with the running heads and running foots, and Microtype, which I'm not going to go into the details of, but it's some features that Hante Tan implemented. And the bottom line is that you say use package Microtype and most of your overfull H boxes go away. Always a good thing. This might be a place to mention where a lot of the editing per se was actually to get rid of, in HTML, this question does not come up of page size and editing and the correct hyphenation and a nice line break and nice page breaks, all that stuff just doesn't happen. And so a lot of the editing is really getting that stuff to work right. And the last change we made in the book was to fix one page break so that, you know, you wouldn't have a widow line at the top or something. But so anyway, getting back to the packages, we used URL, not hyperref. Hyperref is not loaded. Because I didn't think it wouldn't work, but because all the interviews are already online in HTML, so we don't need the PDF to be kind of the reference online thing. There are a few Vietnamese words in the book in Phil Taylor's interview, and there's only, I don't know, it might be less than half a dozen words, but we ended up loading Babel and using all the machinery there to switch into Vietnamese. I tried various shortcuts, which turned out not to be shortcuts, and we were very was very grateful that all that was there, and all I had to say was foreign language Vietnamese, and in the end. And again, the fonts, which I'll talk about next, but for the Vietnamese part in particular, Han Thay Thanh, again, I don't know how he does all this stuff, but has extended almost all the free fonts in the tech world, as well as the Microsoft kind of non-free, free in price, but not free in freedom fonts, with Vietnamese glyphs so that they're all available in the kind of standard LaTeX Vietnamese encoding. The other thing about the fonts, I knew I wanted to use Inconsolata, which is a new typewriter font designed by Rafe Levien. There's an interview with him in the book, which is not yet posted on the website. It will be on the website as soon as we finish regenerating. he's quite an interesting guy. He is a prime developer of GhostScript for several years, and he has several other font projects. And I knew that if Inconsolata was going to be ready in time, that we would want to use it. And I just wrote the little style file and stuff. That's all on CTAN now, and it'll be in Tech Live. For the main text, I ended up choosing Charter, and here, which was designed by Matthew Carter at Bitstream. Bitstream donated it. It was one of the very first high-quality, freely available fonts. Probably the late 80s, early 90s, I think, is when Bitstream donated it. And I used this very nifty thingy. Now we'll see if I can make this thing work. Tug DK font catalog, which I highly recommend to anyone trying to choose a font for LaTeX. Polly Jorgensen, a Danish fellow, created this website, and it shows you not only samples of most of the interesting free text fonts that are available, it also shows you the exact LaTeX code that you need to type to put that in, which is often very far from obvious. And in particular, Paul Pichereau, who I know nothing about and wish he'd either be interviewed or write an article, has extended Charter to be supported by math. I'm not exactly sure how much, there wasn't much math in the book, so I didn't really see very much of it. But that was what Polly's site told me to use, so that's what I used. And it turns out there's several versions of Charter, even beyond Paul's extended math version and the original version uploaded by Bitstream. Bitstream, there's at least two versions of metrics on CTAN, one of which for Charter, there's the original version uploaded by Bitstream, and there's a new version, which I'm not exactly sure where it came from, which is purportedly newer. But it turns out that the new version is bad. The kerning table is quite awful, and so if you have a V and a period next to each other, they'll almost be touching. It's way over-kerned. And so and Paul had based his stuff on the new metrics because they were newer. So I just wrote a little script to take the kerning table out of the old font, put it into the new font, and make everything work. And I should say that the make file and everything interesting here is online. It's talked about more in the article, and it's online. Anybody who cares can look at it. I said I'd mention why we ended up choosing LaTeX, and the answer was precisely because of dealing with fonts. When we were first trying to proof the book and design which font did we want to use, there's half a dozen or so reasonable choices. And I just wanted to swap out a couple of lines in the style file, retypeset the book, and get a grip on it. And you cannot do that in plain text, and I did not know enough context to be able to do it. So we ended up with LaTeX kind of by default. So that is kind of the story of the LaTeX development of the book. And here, I believe, is the output corresponding to the interview that Dave just showed us. This is just a sample page of the book. And we have the actual book here. I guess Dave has been passing them out to me.
No, holding them off till now to save, so I have some drama at this point.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll try not to steal your thunder. Okay, so LaTeX was really good for lots of things, but as we all know, LaTeX is not completely good. No software is completely good. Pain and suffering with LaTeX, there were two kind of significant things which I did not know about LaTeX when I started this project and now are deeply embedded in my brain. One is indentation of verbatim. So there's a few people who wrote little blocks of code. Phil Taylor, again, comes to mind. He was actually the one who insisted that the verbatim blocks be indented. And so when we wanted to indent them, it looks better. Phil was right. It looks better if you indent the verbatim blocks. It turns out that LaTeX typesets verbatim as a one-item list with no list marker. And there's a rationale for it. I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do, but it means that left skip and all the other usual ways of indenting something do not work. And I never did find a real solution to that. I simply started to use fancy VRB, use package fancy VRB over there, which has a left margin option, and you set it and it does it. And I believe it, as far as I could tell, it re-implements verbatim from scratch in a different way. Another thing about that I just wanted to mention as an aside, since I also mentioned MicroType, this didn't come up in the book, but it came up in the Tugboat issue, which just went to print. If you have two lines of verbatim and you've enabled MicroType, they might very well be shifted relative to one another, which is not at all what you want or what you expect. So like it could even appear it's most of a character space. And there's info in the MicroType manual about how to work around that, and there might even be a fix for it in TechLive, since I complained bitterly to Tan. Again, turns out you need a new primitive in PDF Tech to fix this. Like, don't ask me. But
if you use fancy VRB, do you still have the same problem?
I do not know. I do not know. But I believe you do, because I think it's not about the verbatim mode. I believe it's about I'll stick with my first answer. I don't know. Like I said, it came up in Tugboat, and in the Tugboat article, fancy VRB wasn't being used. So that was the pain, I guess. So now the suffering. Vertical space above lists. So we wanted to control vertical space above lists. There is a LaTeX parameter for this. It's /topsep. There should be like triple dangerous bends around it or something in the manual. It does work for a while, but as soon as you have a font change in your document, the value of topsep gets reset to whatever LaTeX original value was, which is not your value. And there are some packages. There's a FAQ entry about this. There are some packages to deal with this. None of those packages always either did too much for me or too little. So I delved into the code a bit, and it turns out that the secret macro, which LaTeX defines, /@listi, the I just means first level list. We didn't have any nested lists, thank God. Is where all those things are squirreled away. And if you redefine /@listi and not just topsep, then you can control vertical space above lists and feel empowered. I felt empowered, believe me. It's like, yay, no more. Well, anyway. Okay, so that was LaTeX. On to M4. I just want to mention two things here as well. The first was just a little thing about date conversion. In all the sources, we used this numerical format, YYYMMDD, so that we could sort them and, you know, it was uniform, etc. In the book, in the actual printed book, I think it was Barbara who said one day, you know, it would be a lot prettier to say January 1st, 2008 instead of a bunch of numbers. And we said, well, okay, if Barbara says to do it, better do it. So I poked around and found this M4 built-in command, esys command, which just lets you execute an external command, like write 18, you could say. And there's the GNU date utility, which I highly recommend to anybody working with dates, can do the actual parsing and conversion. I didn't have to program any of that. The only thing that was hard about this was finding out about the existence of esys command. The GNU M4 manual is very thorough, very expensive, very long, and it's definitely a reference manual. You think some of our things are reference manuals, this is a real reference manual. It's good, but anyway, so that was good. Dave mentioned in passing my second primary M4 pain detail, which is about commas. In the book, we had things like this, and this is something somebody actually wrote. sure, I can learn that. And he put it in quotes. So we have one of our M4 macros, underscore quote. We named all our macros with underscores just to make it simple. And we went along happily with this. And it's a macro in the first place because, of course, in HTML, you want to say LD quo and the RD quo entities. And in tech, you want two left quotes and two right quotes, or grav accents if you want to fall in with the majority of the world, which we don't. But anyway, so we went along fine with this, and we never really noticed any problem. One day I was proofreading the output, and I noticed that of the book, and I noticed that the "I can learn that" and the comma had disappeared, and all we had was "sure" in quotes. And the answer is, for anybody still in suspense, quote being a function, and for separating arguments with commas, the first argument was "sure," the second argument was "I can learn that," so we dutifully quoted the "sure" and ignored the "I can learn that." And the it's trivial to fix, you just put in those fancy double brackets which Dave talked about. So that was fine, but there are probably 20 or 30 macros where the arguments could contain commas. Some of the text could be quite lengthy, crossing over lines, so I couldn't use grep or perl, which are those mysterious utilities Dave said I may have used earlier to convert his HTML to M4. Any of the line-oriented utilities were not going to fly. And in fact, really the only tool which could parse the M4 input was M4. And so I ended up writing this helper macro, IV check empty. And this great mass of quotes and parentheses really boils down to passing the second argument to this macro. And all the macro does is give an error message if that argument exists. And then we just put the first argument in quotes. And this found probably 25 other places where we had lost text out of the interviews and hadn't noticed. So I was glad I did it. And now, back to Dave for the cover.
You can do this Perl.
Hmm? Yeah, you could. If you worked hard enough at it, you could.
Yeah, because Perl is not binary.
Right.
What's happening? I think I missed the slide, but yeah. There's a slide somewhere in here that says this was cover was once again inspired by the Mathematical People book. We did some various cover thinking, talked back and forth, involved Steve Peter for a while, and ultimately we decided, why don't we do something quite a lot like the cover of Mathematical People? We'll have some of our interviewees on the front cover. We'll title the book Text People. And you can't see it, but these are the names of all the interviewees repeated. We put the interviewees' names on the back. So it's not an exact copy, but it's kind of mimicking it. Does anybody know who any of these mathematicians are on the cover here? We know Knuth, of course. Well, here's the answer. Again, this is Ron Graham. The two people here, Ron Graham's one standing on his head. He's the great combinatorialist, who was for a long time at Bell Labs. I think he's at San Diego now.
He can juggle.
I met him in the world of juggling. I was a juggler, and I got to know him there. In fact, Ron and I are in the same issue of Fortune magazine in the column about what executives do in their spare time.
I wrote a paper with him.
Okay. Our cover, we looked in the Praktek Journal, we saw the article by Yuri and his colleague, and we basically copied it. Basically what that is make a box, save a graphic in it, and then put the box at some Cartesian coordinate. However, we didn't have the wisdom to use Tixi, and we couldn't get transparency to work well in PS Tricks. So a little bit of what we did, I did an Illustrator, and then I put the Illustrator image in a box, and then we put the other stuff on top of it. We tried to use vector graphics wherever we could. We're forced by the printer to use a different color space. We had to convert a lot of the photos, all the photos, to grayscale. And exactly how we did that was done in Photoshop. I guess I won't go into converting color into grayscale, except to say there are a lot of different ways to do it, and it's a little unclear what works best in any case. In some cases, we sent the color to the printer, asked them print as is, and in fact, the printer's translation did a pretty good job. In some cases, we just did a conversion to grayscale. In some cases, we took the L channel for a lab, from a lab color space. In some channels, cases, we took the red from an RGB color space, adjusted them. We did a lot of different things. And in three cases, we actually manipulated the photographs. Yesterday, you saw Han Letan's photograph many times on a very green background, kind of a green guy on a green background. He didn't show up in black and white. He was hidden in the trees. So we traced around him and made the background get light. We made Jonathan's hat pop out on the black and white, and we took away David Carlyle's great shadow beside his face that looked okay in color and didn't look good at all in black and white.
When Dave says we, what he means is he.
So
I complained about all those three things and then he fixed them.
So here's the picture. As you can see, we've got text people, like mathematical people. We've got some photographs of some of the people who are here. Jonathan, Kaveh. Our basic choice of what went on the color was who matched in their color photograph the background gradient. It all had to do with colors rather than position in the tech community. The development environment, I work on Windows, Carl works on Linux. We communicated through an SVN repository on the TUG server. And I don't know about Carl, but I did a good bit of my compilations on the server as well. I did major edits back on my own machine just because it's a lot easier, but I would do a lot of the compilations on the TUG server. So we greatly appreciate Kaveh and the TUG server. We decided to self-publish. The publisher is the person who has the ISBN number. It turns out that's the technical definition. We got the ISBN number in TUG's name. I'm going to talk about this basically in my next talk, so I won't talk about it more now other than to say what I just said. We self-published in the name of TUG. Carl and I funded the small amount of development costs, and TUG will get any profits after we cover the development costs. Okay, going forward, we already mentioned that we're going to recompile all the M4 files with Barbara and everybody else's edits, a few new endnotes that people added, back into HTML. I have that working. Now I have to make it work sort of more automatically than one at a time. We've got the definitions, for the M4 to HTML definitions, which are much more now that we have to handle everything that was handled in LaTeX, but haven't written the outside stuff, don't have it running, that sort of generates the whole website and all the indexes. And a few years from now, we can consider another book. We are definitely going to go on with the interviews. And if we do it again in a few years, we've built a big mechanism which should continue to work. So, reflections. I think we're relatively happy with the decision to use M4 for retargeting one language or the other. It could have been an interesting learning experience to learn some other program and do it some other way. And maybe I'll do that next time. But I'm pretty happy with this. You agree with that, Carl? Okay. I think the thing that strikes me most is how tech, being essentially command-oriented, fits into a bigger workflow, so simply. Going to LaTeX, coming back toward M4, tech is really a plus when you're going to fit it into a big workflow which doesn't have human intervention at each step. SVN is great. If you haven't used it, do. It's wonderful for communicating back and forth. Happy enough with self-publishing. I'll talk about that in the next presentation. very happy with the interview series reception in the community. Used Beamer to create this presentation. That went relatively easily. That was the first Beamer presentation I ever made.
We used Andrew's article, Bill. Andrew's article.
Yep. And I think I'm overjoyed to be done with the book. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions? Yeah.
Why is it was necessary to use tech for the code?
To use what?
I insisted on it.
Who?
I insisted.
I don't understand. I didn't hear the question yet.
Why was necessary to deal with the cover in tech?
The cover.
Carl insisted upon it. I started by doing a little prototyping in Illustrator. Mm-hmm. Carl insisted we do it in tech. Ultimately, it was a good idea to do it in tech because we decided to use in the cover the same fonts we used in the book, Charter and in Consolata. And those aren't available in Illustrator on my computer.
Actually, speaking about tech, we discussed it in the workshop. You could do color separation and transition to CMYK in tech.
Yeah, tech sure.
Has a way to do it. So you can actually create a picture right. In any color space, and then you have a tech trick to go to grayscale or CMYK.
Right.
It's magic.
But it was pretty easy to do it in PS Tricks, except for the transparency issue.
The new PS Tricks has transparency, but I never used it.
Well, and probably if we uploaded enough revisions, we could have gotten it to work. But at that point, we were anxious to get done for this meeting. and so workarounds were the order of the day. Yeah?
I just want to say that color separation can lead to very expensive mistakes. Because if you pick it up after the fact, you may be down with the bill and no way to go back.
Other questions?
Okay,
for the few of the interviewees who contacted me in advance and said you want copies of the book, I brought that many with me. For any interviewees who didn't contact me in advance, I didn't carry more than I had actual orders for, but I'll be glad to provide them to you under the same deal I'm giving to the other interviewees, which is essentially a cost. We will shortly have up on the TUG website under tug.org/interviews/book how members can buy it at a big discount from the Amazon price. Okay, thank you.
You're next, aren't you?
Hey. Yep, I think we have a break, don't we?
Yep. Okay, thank you very much.